we can see that this promise that the internet was going to connect us was a complete lie. I mean, 3/4 of UK children spend more time inside than prison inmates. Young people are saying they're lonelier than pensioners now.
1% of people in this country own more than 70% of the people here. Are you trying to tell me that that's not part of why people are deeply unhappy? It's really important to resituate the conditions, the material conditions in which the lack of fun, allegedly, that Gen Z or millennials are experiencing is existing within. We're talking about a generation for whom the majority cannot afford a home, who are working but cannot afford to live the way that their generation just above them was able to, that are struggling with all of the basic economic markers from education to housing to day-to-day living. And I find that there seems to be this desire to focus on why Gen Z aren't having fun. Well, I can tell you that when you're living at your mom and dad's house till you're 35 and you can't afford anything, it's difficult to focus on fun. I mean, I'm sure you can find it, but I think that there's more focus on the joy that would be fined from taxing the rich, which would be great. A lot of fun to be found in that. So I would say that on this idea that is life centrally about, you know, experience or the achievement of goals, I think that the depth and meaning that we find in any pursuit of a goal is in the collective and personal, the community liberation that comes through that. And I think that the sort of philosophical references that I go to, which are particularly within the Black radical tradition, but also Islamic theological tradition and spiritual forms of liberation, there is this idea that there is a lot of joy to be found in challenging the capitalist and colonial paradigms that have tried to convince us that the accumulation of things and status is the way to find happiness. And I think there's a whole generation of young people saying, that's a lie. We're going to need some redistribution to be able to appreciate any kind of happiness or joy. And until we start talking about that, rather than why aren't people having more sex, I think that we will continuously find ourselves in this loop of, Why are Gen Z so miserable? We've told you, we can't afford coffee. Like, people can't afford the basics. They're struggling to survive. What are you talking about happiness for? Show us greater social equality and you will find a happier generation. And so for our generation, for Gen Z, for millennials, for actually any of you that are invested in meaningful joy and happiness, it's going to come from collective liberation. That's where the true joy is.
Freya, does that align with your findings and conversations?
I'm not sure. I don't think centrally the problem is economics, because having looked around at my generation, I think there are a lot of comfortable people living very affluent lives with a lot of leisure time and a lot of material goods who are really struggling. They're really struggling with anxiety. They're really struggling with depression. I mean, 57% of girls in 2021 said that they feel persistently hopeless and sad. 36% of American young people said that they had no meaning in their lives and felt depressed within the last year. And I don't think that comes just from things like you can't get on the housing ladder. I think it comes from a real sense that you can't build anything stable. You can't attach to anything or anyone or anywhere. There's no real sense of community. There's no real sense of meaning. And I think sometimes that actually affects people in more wealthy households more so, because they really don't have that sense of meaning. And I think what you said is true, that, you know, we're humans. We need more than material goods and consumption. But I would argue a lot of the distress I've seen is among wealthy, affluent people who just feel hopeless in their lives. So I think it's not just about economics. It's something deeper as well.
That's kind of aligned with what you were saying, James, isn't it? That, like, the sort of philosophical pursuits of our generation are minimal, if there at all.
Well, most people don't even know what philosophy is these days. I'm surprised. So neither of you think that the issue is, because, you know, I thought maybe it was our new technology, you know, the fact that people are just on their phones all the time, and internet culture is a little bit poisonous and this kind of thing.
I mean, there's a lot showing that the anxiety you're referring to is connected.
Yeah, because I would have thought there's you see, it seems to me that we're very goal-directed people. You know, that's what human beings are like, right? So if you have something you're trying to do, you feel good and that allows you to have fun, right? Okay, so you set yourselves goals. I mean, the best kind of goals, the ones that aren't forced on you, like you've got to save somebody's life because they're drowning or something like that, okay? Or you've got to make the world a better place or things like that. But the goals we set are, like when you're on holiday, right? You say, okay, so today I'm going to visit that castle, then I'm going to go to this place, then I'm going to go to this restaurant, okay? What's your goal, really? Your goal is to have fun, okay? And, that, you know, the fun comes around that. But when we don't have a goal, right, then people get depressed. It's, I can't see any point in doing anything. So human beings like to set themselves goals. And it seems to me that a lot of the technology, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but I thought the general view was that younger generations are being made miserable by technology, which is misusing goals. It's like you've got to keep scrolling in order to get these points, or, you know, this concept of, some of you know the concept of grinding in computer games, right? So you have to spend 2 hours doing something very, very boring to make progress in the game. You know, that's a complete misuse of this technology. It's showing no respect for people's experiences, and it's an abuse of the fact that we are goal-directed. It gives you fake, pointless goals, you know, and, you know, the kind of goals which I was looking at on Freya's, the website you're associated with, you know, social media, you know, it's like, oh, how many likes have I got? I mean, how absurd, you know, that becomes your goal. You know, you kind of get irritated by these people that you don't encounter. And
I mean, surely when the internet was first created, everyone was celebrating how it's bringing together communities, and these online communities were appearing. People with diverse interests were finally able to meet each other, even though they weren't geographically connected. I mean, Miriam, you talked about connection in your opening statements, right? So connection and community is clearly really a big part of this, no?
Yeah, let's just remember that Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook as a project for rating women on their looks at university. So yeah, he was clearly motivated by an altruistic desire to connect people, I'm sure. And that's very evident, obviously, in the face of the type of social media platforms that we have today. Look, I think social media promised us connection, and I think what it has done instead is create greater isolation. I mean, the statistics you refer to allude to that, and there are plenty of studies showing that we're spending huge amounts of time. I'd be embarrassed to look at how long I spend on my phone, but I had to do it for a show that I did recently, and it was 8 hours. I had 8 hours of screen time. Yeah. Now check yours, because you're judging me right now, but check yours when you get home. But the point is that these are spaces where interactions are commodified. So you have to remember that, particularly for younger people, these are spaces where people are also trying to make a living simultaneously to connecting with others. And so there is a drive to connect with people with intention of making some kind of profit. It's not the sort of natural interactions that you might have face to face. And then in addition to that, the technology obviously offers the possibility of cutting off connections that have been built up immediately. You can block someone, right? So you can be talking to someone on an app. And I'm particularly thinking about the dating scene, because obviously there's like a big generational gap now with today, where in this part of the world, at least, people don't really approach one another in real life anymore, that it's all happening through apps. But you can be talking to someone on an app for months and then they'll just ghost you. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think that happens in real life. Like, you're talking to someone for a few months, they will feel a sense of moral responsibility to explain to you why they no longer wish to talk to you anymore. And so there's a fragility that's created in our sense of connection to one another, not to mention, of course, the fact that there is a huge amount of doxing happening, that these platforms are heavily censored, so that when we're operating within them, we are also operating within a controlled environment. I don't think we even fully understand how much of a controlled environment is. I mean, if you've done anything on Palestine, then you will realize how much doxing and shadow banning and actual attempts to censor on these social media platforms there is. So I'm not sure that they came with the intention of facilitating greater human connection. I think they came to inflate the pockets of a few already very wealthy people who continue to have huge amounts of control on the way that we think.
I mean, Freya, you've also spoken and written about this idea of the value of spontaneous interactions. And of course, spontaneous interactions, in a sense, are necessarily in person, right? It's the person you walk past on the street, you make eye contact with, it's that exchange you have. And how, you know, how basically the internet world completely undermines that. So do you think that those kinds of interactions are absolutely necessary for having these kinds of high quality experiences?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's completely necessary for mental health, for fun, for everything we're talking about. And I think to think about Gen Z in particular for a moment, I think if you think about the only world we've ever known, it's been a world where we can pretty much have everything we want without any human interaction. You know, we've got delivery apps, we've got dating apps, we've got self-service checkouts, we've got online communities, we've got online porn, we've got online lectures. This is a world where we don't need to interact with anyone or have any unplanned encounters. And it's a really tragic world. And I can't get across how little familiarity young people have with any sense of community. This idea that online communities are a lifeline is just a joke to me. I think it's a real indictment of modern society that we think that they're a lifeline. There's no such thing as an online community. It's a complete oxymoron. If you look now at the state of Gen Z and how lonely young people are, we can see that this promise that the internet was going to connect us was a complete lie. I mean, 3/4 of UK children spend more time inside than prison inmates. You know, young people are saying they're lonelier than pensioners now. So I think it's a real tragedy that we've lost this spontaneous interaction. And I think if you think about Gen Z, we've never known any different. We've never known flirting before it became sending an Instagram DM to someone. We've never known falling in love before it was swiping on dating apps. We've never known a world without obsessively documenting and editing and performing yourself as you go. And I think obviously we're struggling with our mental health now, because, you know, those unplanned encounters in communities and with people you know are crucial to mental health, and we've completely lost them.
But millennials do remember a time before that.
Yeah.
And we remember a time where education was free and therefore university was a space where you were definitely going to be having some face-to-face interactions with people. We remember obviously the pre-COVID era where you had to go to work, and although working hours were long, you probably didn't have to work two jobs, which is the case for many in Gen Z now. So there's, you know, a shift away from the places where those interactions could happen that are a product of economic circumstances. And I think the lower down the economic ladder you go, the less opportunities there really are for those interactions, only because you are fighting for survival in spaces that are already highly isolated. So I can't get away from the economics, guys. I don't think that I understand that, you know, wealthy people also struggle with loneliness and with the ways that these technology isolate us. But I think that ultimately we are living in the late stages of capitalism, where the objective is to isolate us as much as possible from one another so that there is no sense of collective liberation, that no sense of collective goals, no ability to organize collectively against those who are basically juicing the last remaining bits of juice from those of us that in this system to feed the beast. You know, we've never had greater inequality. Every year Oxfam publishes this report that shows inequality in the UK. What is it now? 70%. 1% of people in this country own more than 70% of the people here. Are you trying to tell me that that's not part of why people are deeply unhappy? Because we don't have the material. We don't have the material means day to day to achieve basic things that you need to provide for your family, to have a stable home, to know you can't get kicked out of your rented accommodation, to know that you have rights that are not going to be, you know, flouted by politicians who don't actually answer to you anymore.
Do you not find it ironic that a technology that allows us to communicate with anybody in the world and to have, you know, hundreds of friends and connections is making the generation that's grown up with that technology lonelier? Now, how could that possibly be? I'll tell you, in terms of what are the great traditional problems of philosophy, you're all here at this festival, I expect you know the problem of other minds. Okay, so the problem of other minds is, how do I know that these other three people on this stage, for example, have minds. You can't see a mind, okay? I can only see their bodies. Maybe they're just zombies, you know? Maybe there's nothing it's like to be these three people. That's an interesting philosophical question, right? If you do philosophy at university, you will look at the various different theories of how I can know that they have minds. But it's kind of academic, because of course they do, right? I don't really think that they're robots who are blank inside. You know, I know that they have a mind and they have a point of view on the world like I do. But the interesting philosophical question is, how do I know, right? Now, take it if this was a virtual environment, right? This is just amazing. So we're all avatars and I'm controlling this avatar. Okay, maybe I've got a virtual reality headset on or something. I literally do not know if they've got minds. I literally do not know in that situation, okay? And that is what the technology we are producing now is putting us in a situation of, right? You're not really sure whether what you're interacting with is a human or an AI. And that's going to get worse because, you know, there are teams of scientists racing to make this stuff better and better and better, right? What did the head of Google say? If we solve intelligence, we'll solve all problems, right? Okay. So like, it's going to get better and better. It's going to be more and more of a problem. In a video game, yeah, you can have spontaneous interaction with other players, right? But they don't need to be there. Other human beings are being made irrelevant. They're essentially irrelevant, right? The pixels on the screen that you're watching, they might be controlled by another player, but they don't need to be, right? It could be controlled by the AI. It could be controlled by the system. The way the technology is going at the moment, it seems we're producing solipsism machines. You know, solipsism is the view that only I exist. It's an absurd view.
Hang on a minute, though. I mean, people do talk about, you know, in consciousness.
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below. Or visit iai.tv for more debates and talks from the world's leading thinkers on today's biggest ideas.